You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. It's the show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Giotakis. Come on, join me for a ride to the beach. No, we're not getting in a car. Actually, we're beginning our journey at a train station, the 7th Street Metro Station in downtown Los Angeles. That's the start of the Expo Line. The smell of Dunkin' Donuts and Southern Fried Chicken sandwiches from Chick-fil-A wafts onto the platform. Folks in khakis, business suits, and shorts are all getting onto this train.
Welcome aboard the Metro Expo Line. This train's final destination is downtown Santa Monica Station.
We pass a few stops, pick up a few riders as we head west. Vermont, Western, Crenshaw. Station by station, the train fills up. And up. And up.
When I took the Expo Line before, I almost always had a place to sit, whereas now I feel that every single time there's like only standing room and I'm like jam-packed with like so many other people.
That's 20-year-old Nina Long. She's a student over at UCLA, and she commutes to campus a couple times a week during rush hour. And packed trains like this have become the new normal for riders like Nina who take the Expo. Annually, this train sees about 1.5 million boardings. It's generally considered to be the most successful of Metro's rail lines since it started running from downtown to Santa Monica 3 years ago. People love it. And packed or overcrowded trains are a part of that success, right? Well, maybe not if you're actually on the train.
It's pretty uncomfortable to be standing so close to so many people. Sometimes folks get on and they can just barely fit on the train, like their backpack is hanging out the door and the doors won't close.
Today we're dedicating our entire show to all things public transit, trains and buses, and how they affect everyday Angelenos, even if you don't ride them. And KCRW's Danielle Chiriguayo starts us off with more on the overcrowded Expo Line and what it says about the priorities of LA's biggest public transit system.
A ride on the Expo Line recently has become a fist-clenching affair. Knuckles and commuters' faces alike get white with the prospect of running right into the fellow rider at the abrupt stop of a train. In today's heat, riders shuffle onto trains, squeezing in next to one another. And if you haven't seen it for yourself, check out Twitter. It's full of complaints about wall-to-wall bodies and sweaty messes on the trains. So, what's the deal with the overcrowding on the Expo Line? Even as they race to expand the system and fast-track it before the 2028 Olympics, their budget for this fiscal year cut more than 5% of their spending on trains. One way they save that money? Fewer Expo Line trains, starting back in June. And riders noticed right away.
When trying to get onto the train to put my bike in, I don't want to block a door or like, cause any inconvenience, so I usually have to wait for a few trains. But there's like a disparity between the trains. One train will be really full and then the other train will be almost like no one on it in some places.
That's 19-year-old John David Morgan. He rides the train nearly every morning on his way to class at Santa Monica College. To help make his journeys to and from metro stations a bit faster, he rides his bike. And as it turns out, that just makes things harder sometimes. But if emptier trains are good for commuters, they're not great for Los Angeles as a whole. After all, lots of those train riders have cars and could easily become part of the daily traffic jam. Plus, fewer riders means less money for the metro system. So LA Metro wants people on those trains.
So crowding is good, but only if you respond to it by providing more service, because that means more people will travel, more people will benefit from whatever the trip is making possible in their lives. And that ultimately is why you have the service in place to begin with, to benefit people who otherwise would not be able to receive those benefits.
That's Jim Moore. He's a professor of engineering at USC. He points out that crowded trains means you need more of them. And after a lot of complaints, that's the conclusion the metro system drew as well. So last week, LA Metro pivoted, adding back train services they had previously cut. The cries of overcrowded riders had finally been heard. Starting in November, they will restore Expo Line services to the way it was before June. And now, there's even talk of speeding up the train. In some spots, the Expo Line has to wait at stoplights. The train noticeably slows down at intersections near USC and in downtown LA. To help fix that, LA City Council is voting today on whether to give the train priority over cars at these intersections, allowing the train to whiz past the traffic. This year's budget cuts didn't come out of nowhere. Here's Jim Moore again.
We are at, frankly, a point of crisis.
LA Metro, like other transit agencies around the country, has been losing riders for over 10 years. Ridership is down 19% in the past 6 years.
We have had periods of well-understood growth in public transit ridership in the last 30-plus years. But the simple truth is that the great reductions in transit ridership we've seen since 2007 were completely avoidable and could be reversed. And we know how to reverse them, but we are not.
How to fix the problem? Moore says it's all about providing better service. Focus more on bus riders, he says. They're the backbone of the system. Add more buses. Integrate bus and train trips. And when a train gets popular, don't mess with success. For KCRW, I'm Danielle Chiriguayo.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, getting people out of their cars is so important in Southern California, but over the last decade, Metro's ridership is down pretty significantly. And Greater LA's traffic congestion and air quality are really suffering as a result. I'm joined now by Philip Washington, who's CEO of the LA County Metropolitan Transportation Authority, or LA Metro. Sir, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Why do you think fewer people are riding public transportation when you look at the big picture?
Well, it's a couple of things. First of all, this is a national trend, unfortunately. Bus ridership is declining. It's a national trend. Now, part of this, I think, has to do with a robust economy. And part of this has to do with us making sure that we are enhancing the customer experience, whether that is cellular service in our tunnels, whether that is putting signage out or countdown clocks telling people when our trains are coming, which we have just put out on the system. One of the studies that was done by UCLA that we partnered with really pointed to car ownership as the big reason why ridership is down. That study talked about over the last 10 years there have been 2.5 million more people that have come to Southern California, and at the same time, there have been 2.1 million additional car purchases. So that's almost one car per person. So as a result of all of that, we are looking at our entire bus system here in LA County. We're revamping the entire system. It's called Next Gen. It's an 18-month effort where we are saying that we are wiping the slate clean in terms of all of our routes and all of our service. And I think that that will go a long way to bringing ridership back. And one of the big things in that study is to speed up our system and actually seeking preemption for rail lines like the Expo Line and the Blue Line. We stop at too many intersections, and our trains should have priority.
I want to talk more about this study because you're talking about buses. You announced a couple of years ago this bus study, the Next Gen bus study, and results were supposed to come out earlier this year, I think in April. Nothing has come out yet, though. Why do we have a delay? And what can you tell us about what that study has shown?
Well, one of the things that delayed us is outreach and researching a number of things with regard to how passengers and how riders travel. But right now we are on schedule to seek board approval to release our draft service plan in January of 2020.
You want to give us maybe a curtain raiser? You want to make some news today? What's the nugget there that you want to tell folks about this bus study?
Well, it's a couple of things, I would think. First of all, fast, frequent, and reliable service is the key, which is why we're pushing forward with bus-only lanes in various areas for our bus rapid transit. When we look at the service that we have out there right now, obviously we have the peak periods, morning and the evening. We have a lot of service out there. But during the midday, and I'm talking from, say, 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., we actually have a dip in the service that we have on the street. Well, what we found out is that people want that service during the midday. So the question is, how can we increase the service in the midday on bus, and where should it be?
And getting them there faster, which I would imagine would involve bus-only lanes, because buses get stuck in traffic too. So what about bus-only lanes? Are those in the plans? And, you know, there's been a lot of pushback, right, from drivers and neighborhoods.
That's right. That's right. We believe that bus-only lanes make sense. Signal prioritization makes sense. We believe that preemption for our rail system makes sense. A good example.
What is preemption for your rail system? What does that mean?
For example, we have 30 intersections that train goes through on the Expo line. You know, we might have 200 people on a train, and we have to stop for, you know, single occupancy vehicles. We can shave so much time off the end-to-end trip if we had preemption. And so we are proposing and pursuing just that.
And which is similar to what you're talking about for the buses, those bus-only lanes.
That's right. Bus-only lanes. If you look at the Orange Line in the San Fernando Valley, which is one of our most successful routes, you know, we are installing railroad-type gates at the intersections for buses. And so we can just speed through those intersections. Those are the kinds of things that we think makes sense with regard to preemption and priority.
You think there's a class divide between bus and rail? I know about a half of all bus riders live below the poverty line. Mm-hmm. Rail riders skew a little wider. They skew a little more middle class. I mean, does that make the political issue for Metro more difficult when it comes to figuring out where to put your efforts, you know, the time and the money into the system?
Well, we do know that there's a significant transit-dependent population out there. We have probably the largest percentage of low-income riders on our system than any other system in this country. The closest one, I think, is Chicago, actually my hometown. But at the same time, we have the lowest fares for a system our size in this country as well. So I don't think there's a class divide. I ride the bus or the train every day. I see people, you know, with suits on the bus and everything else. So I think we're getting away from that, but the perception is still out there.
I know you've got the Crenshaw line opening next year,
yes,
which is a big deal, taking riders to LAX, or at least closer to LAX than they've been able to go. The Gold Line extension in the San Gabriel Valley, plans for rail across the Sepulveda Pass. I know that's probably years away, maybe a decade or more. Is rail the future of the metro system? Is that where we need to go, do you think, to make the system work?
Bus will always be the backbone of our system.
Even with declining ridership, though?
Yes. Right now, 75% of our riders are on the bus. Right now. And then, a number of people think that the majority of our riders are on rail. That is not accurate. So with 75% of our riders on bus, I think that will always be the backbone of our system. Now, having said that, yes, we are building a lot of rail, but even in building rail, you still need feeder service into the rail stations, which are buses. I think buses will remain the backbone of our system. The big question on the bus side is, again, speed, reliability, and making sure that our bus routes go to where people actually need them to go.
Philip Washington, CEO of LA Metro, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Well, there you go. Metro CEO talking about why ridership on the buses and trains is down, what Metro's planning to do about it. With me now and listening to that conversation are Alyssa Walker, urbanism editor at Curbed LA, one of our regulars here at Greater LA. Hello, Alyssa.
Hey, Steve.
And Juan Matute, who's professor and deputy director of the Institute of Transportation Studies at UCLA. One of the studies, by the way, that Philip Washington mentioned in that interview. Hi, Juan.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You bet. What is your initial reaction, Juan, to what we heard from Washington? I'm sure you have a lot to say about it. You just listened to the interview. Anything in particular stand out to you?
A lot of what he said is, I think, on track for the region.
And you took a lot of notes, by the way.
I did.
I love that.
In improving bus ridership, he did bring up that next-gen study, which is that turnaround study for declines in bus ridership that the region's been experiencing for the past 8 years or so.
Did you know that 75% number about the people who use buses?
It used to be higher.
It did.
It did.
Well, that would because there was little rail.
But
right?
It's still counter to the impression. I think a lot of people who use transit occasionally focus on trips on the rail system. So when they think of transit in Los Angeles, they're thinking of the expanding rail system. For people who use it every day, they need to use the bus to get around, and the bus has become increasingly unreliable.
What about you, Alyssa? Anything catch your ear?
I was happy to hear that he acknowledges some of the problems with making changes are neighborhood opposition, as you asked about. We have some pretty heated battles, things that we've talked about here on the show about bus rapid transit, bus lanes from neighborhoods that don't want them. And would love to hear, you know, Metro's thoughts on how we get around that.
And by the way, there is opposition in neighborhoods to a lot of things, not just Metro. Not, I mean, any kind of development. And this is where the term NIMBY comes from, for better or worse, right? I mean, there are some good fights to be had there, but some people just don't want development. What is your response to all those drivers out there who are saying, no, if you take away a lane of traffic, if you make it a sole bus lane so they can move freely or at least freer, you're going to make the horrible commute even worse.
Well, you know what I'm going to say.
What are you going to say?
Another city did it, and it worked really well.
Which city was this?
LA, okay. We've also have good examples. But recently in New York City, they took 14th Street, very busy street, used by tons of different vehicles and people, and they made it into two bus-only lanes. And the biggest fear was that if they did that, 13th Street, 15th Street, all these streets would get overwhelmed with car traffic. And it didn't happen because bus ridership went up 15% on that route because everybody saw how efficiently the bus was running.
But people in New York know, I mean, yes, there are cars in New York, most of them taxi cabs, by the way, in Manhattan especially, right? But people know, I mean, New York is a subway town that dates back decades, probably a century or more. So they're used to it. We're not.
Well, even if we were in the places, few places where we have prioritized bus service in this city, we have seen those same ridership increases. And I think Juan can speak to, we always talk about the Orange Line as being this really success story for LA, which I guess didn't technically take space away from cars because it was put in an old railway right of way. But when they put the service in there, you could see market changes in the way people chose to travel along the same corridor. So it does happen. It does work in LA, too.
He talked about the busway in the valley, right? This is the Orange Bus Line. And by putting, you know, gates and things like that to make people stop, I mean, it essentially is like a light rail line, except it's a bus with wheels.
It essentially is. Yes.
I think like it always comes down to time. It might not come down to cost for these, you know, what we call discretionary riders, but time. We need it to be competitive with the car. We need it to be faster than the car. And that's not for any other reason than to just have our city function more efficiently for everyone in this city, for drivers too.
You're an academic, Juan, okay? I mean, is there the political support, do you think, for doing the hard things like the bus-only lanes or even, gosh, dare I say congestion pricing? Because when you talk about that, like pay to move, right, in your own car, those are pretty unpopular moves that really might motivate people to get onto public transit.
Yeah, they could. I think ultimately politicians want to bring projects to their district that shows the benefit in their district. And even with a substantial amount of sales tax going towards transportation projects, those funds will be limited in what they can buy in the future. That Orange Line example was one of the most cost-effective transit lines in the country. You can build four or five Orange Lines for the price of one Crenshaw line. So ultimately, we'll have to move towards projects like that, bus-only lane, center-running, arterial bus, rapid transit, in order to bring more projects to more parts of the region.
Where do you think we need, Alyssa, these bus-only lanes? Where is it utilized the best, where it really does incentivize people to get out of their cars?
I think the very obvious one that we need as soon as possible is something like Vermont, which we don't really have a very good north-south connection to get people fast from one side of the city to the other. And I think it's like 8 lanes wide in my neighborhood. It's a very wide street, yeah. Which I feel like is often congested, and the buses are often waiting in traffic to get through there.
Vermont has a lot of bus travelers, obviously. We're talking about K-Town, right? That takes you, well, from South L.A. all the way to Los Feliz, right?
Vermont, you can back me up on this. Vermont has more people using the buses on it than some rail lines.
43,000 daily passengers on the two bus lines that
but
run
when I'm
in Vermont.
Driving, when I'm driving on Vermont from, like, you know, especially between, like, Pico and Sunset Boulevard, it's like it's so thick there with cars anyway. How do you make a bus only lane without making the other people miserable?
So the curb lane, if that's the configuration, moves fewer vehicles than the rest of the lanes because of turning movements. And when you have frequent transit service, often some of those turning movements are impeded by the bus making a stop. And so you're not reducing the capacity by a third or a fourth when you convert the curb lane to a bus only lane.
You think it's a wash?
No, I think it could be a net benefit because at the same time, you're creating a much more attractive option for people. You're giving them a way to escape the traffic in the general lanes. And when people have that option, which they don't now, I think they will take that option and reduce passenger vehicle traffic through the corridor.
Is there a stigma, do you think, to riding the bus?
Absolutely, for some groups.
Some people just don't want to ride the bus. There are some undesirables on the bus.
You hear that a lot from people, again, these discretionary riders. I tried it once. Something happened. I didn't try it again. Some of those fears are, you know, founded, but some of them are designed into the system. If you don't have a place to wait that's safe, if you don't have a bus shelter that's protecting you from the sun or that is well lit at night, we talked about this when we talked about Metro's women's study that they did, why would you put yourself through that if, like you said, you could be in the comfort of your car? And that's a more holistic set of solutions that needs to be part of this bus study that they're doing, the next gen study. I mean, yes, fast, frequent, reliable, great, but making sure that people feel like they're welcome.
Given its physical and population size, do you think Greater LA is a place where mass transit can really work on a large scale? Given somebody who maybe lives in Alhambra and has a job in, you know, the San Fernando Valley.
Well, I think what people experience every day on the roads is that we're already too dense for our level of auto dependency to work. So the only option is making transit work better.
And the last mile issue, too, right? I live a mile and a half from a metro station.
That's about the distance, yeah,
right.
That you're not going to walk.
And I've done it before. I have walked.
Right, right.
And especially after a long day at work, do I want to do that? Or could I take a Lyft or an Uber?
It's 90 degrees and there's no shade on your path. I mean, this is why I keep saying part of Metro's, you know, outreach and what needs to be done as part of, you know, making these corridors more appealing to people, not just for bus ridership, but for, you know, any kind of transit options is walkability. We need the sidewalks to welcome you just as much as the bus shelters. We need trees to be a part of, you know, this city's fabric. And there's been things introduced this week. We're talking about that. That's great. But it needs to all happen a lot faster than it's happening.
And in concert with one another, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Juan Matute, professor and deputy director of the Institute of Transportation Studies over at UCLA, and Alyssa Walker, urbanism editor over at Curb LA. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support comes from Bergamot Station Arts Center, a world-renowned creative arts complex in Santa Monica with more than 20 fine art galleries, presenting exhibitions of local and international artists, hosting community and cultural happenings, and educational and nonprofit events. More information at bergamotstation.com.
Well, that's going to do it for our show on transportation today. We would love to hear from you, by the way. If you have questions or thoughts, stories, ideas to share about how to get around L.A., what it would take to get you out of your car, share those thoughts with us at kcrw.com/greaterLA. You can also personally share it with me by Twitter at Radio Chio. Tomorrow, as the heat continues in the Southland, it's important to note that the city of L.A. wants to make neighborhoods cooler, and they're doing it street by street. But at what cost? Is it working? Next on KCRW, it's All the President's Lawyers with Josh Barrow and Ken White. Lots to talk about, obviously. Jenna Cagle, Sonia Geis, P.J. Shahamat, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Christine Comito, and Christian Bordahl make this show happen each and every day. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for the ear and for your time. Have a great day.
Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.